Dave Starmia. Dave Starmia. Dave Starmia. I've been running hard.
Run hard.
Taking over the top. Dave Starmia. Dave Starmia. Dave Starmia. You make a dead man come.
Come.
You make a dead man come.
Come.
You make a dead man come.
Come.
You make a dead man come.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington today, President Bush met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair one day after the Iraq Study Group released its report. The two held a press conference during which President Bush continued to assert that the coalition forces would prevail in Iraq. However, the president did acknowledge that the situation there is bad and the task is daunting. The Iraq Study Group's bipartisan 10-member panel came up with 79 separate unanimous recommendations on how to change the president's policy in Iraq, which the group concluded was not working. One of those recommendations is a call for the withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from Iraq by early 2008. President Bush has already rejected that idea. Wednesday was one of the deadliest days for U.S. forces in Iraq. The military now says 11 American troops lost their lives in several separate attacks. In the first week of December, at least 31 U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq. Late yesterday, the Senate gave near unanimous approval to Robert Gates to be the new defense secretary. The vote was 95-2. Saudi forces battled gunmen today in Jeddah, a port in the Red Sea. The Interior Ministry reported that two Saudi security forces were wounded in the shootout. The gunmen were believed to be Islamic militants. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert will travel to Europe next week, and he is expected to meet with Pope Benedict at the Vatican. A Middle East scholar resigned his position from the Carter Center in Atlanta after controversy over former President Jimmy Carter's latest book on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict titled Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. The professor accused the former president of, quote, factual errors, omissions, and plagiarism, according to the Washington Post. One day after its release to the public, the Iraq Study Group's report is available for sale, and it has quickly become a bestseller. It is already number 4 at Barnes & Noble's website and number 10 on Amazon.com. An autopsy was conducted today on James Kim, the 35-year-old San Francisco man who was found dead yesterday in the southern Oregon wilderness after trying to help his stranded family. His wife and two children were rescued by their car on Monday, and they are in good condition. He died of hypothermia and exposure, although the exact time when he died could not be determined. And today is the 65th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Nearly 500 survivors gathered in Hawaii to commemorate that day of infamy. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
NASA has prepared the Space Shuttle Discovery for a nighttime launch, even though the bad weather may force the takeoff to be scrubbed. There is only a 40% chance of good weather today and a 30% chance Friday. Members of the 109th Congress may vote on a massive tax and trade package before ending their lame duck session. The legislation would normalize trade with Vietnam and extend tax breaks that affect millions of Americans. However, the controversial bill would also open up oil and gas drilling in more than 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. The Federal Reserve reported that consumer borrowing fell in October by 0.6%, the biggest amount in 14 years. A large drop in auto loans was cited as an explanation for that decrease. Starbucks said that in the past 5 years, since their reloadable cards have been available, 96 million of them have been purchased by customers, bringing in over $2 billion of profit for the coffee company. McDonald's is entering the high-end burger wars. The company will test market hamburgers made from Angus beef at 6 restaurants in the Los Angeles area. Angus beef is considered more flavorful. Burger King and Carl's Jr. already offer those fancier, pricier burgers. Light Sweet Crude trading at $62.66 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 31 points at 12,278, NASDAQ down 18, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Just tickled pink to be with you this evening. Well, maybe the pink comes from how confounded cold it is. And the 2-3 inches of snow on the ground here in the hills and hollers of West, by God, wonderful West Virginia. And, I've got this, I was sharing this with John Fox earlier. I've got this theory about snow. All snow that falls before January 1st is beautiful and lovely. All snow that falls after January 1st just sucks. You know, because after January 1st, everybody takes their holiday lights down. Oh, Jesus, he didn't say Christmas lights. They take their holiday lights down. And so, you know, this dark time of the year becomes even darker and more grim. Snowfall that has the holiday lights twinkling across it is, however, much more pleasant to endure. But it's actually fairly cold here in the studio right now. I like to work that way. Agnes, on the other hand, who actually is behind the board this evening, by the way, you know, you can't keep her away from work. She's sitting here wrapped up in two or three sheepskins and my Eskimo trapline coat with the genuine coyote fur ruff around the collar, and still she is shivering. But she's here. And we're here, and you're here, and I'm awfully glad that you are, because it's what makes our nights worthwhile, and I hope yours as well. I'm a foodie, and so before we get to the hardcore and the cruel and the sad and the mean that is our daily diet of Republican woe, wanted to share a recipe with you. It's a Christmas cookie recipe. My sister sent it to me. 1 cup of water, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 cup of sugar. You writing this down? 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of brown sugar, lemon juice, 4 large eggs, 1 cup of nuts, 2 cups of dried fruit, and 1 bottle of tequila. Sample the Cuervo to check quality. These are the instructions. Take a large bowl, check the Cuervo again to be sure it's of the highest quality, pour 1 level cup, and drink. Turn on the electric mixer. Beat 1 cup of butter in a large fluffy bowl. add 1 teaspoon of sugar. Beat again. At this point, it's best to make sure the Cuervo's still okay, so try another cup just in case. Turn off the mixer thingy. Break 2 legs and add to the bowl and chuck in the cap full of dried fruit. Pick the frickin' fruit off the floor. Mix on the turner. If the fried droot gets stuck in the beaterers, just pry it loose with a drew scriver. Sample the tequila to check for toxicity. Next, sift 2 cups of salt or something. Check the Jose Cuervo. Now shift the lemon juice and strain your nuts. Add 1 table and a spoon of sugar or something. Whatever you can find. Grease the oven. Turn the cake tin 360 degrees and try not to fall over. Don't forget to bean off the turner. Finally, throw the bowl through the window, finish the Jose Cuervo, and make sure to put the stove in the dishwasher. Cherry Mistmas. Oh, goodness me, I suppose we're not revering Christmas sufficiently. But sometimes holiday cooking gets to be a little bit like that, you know, especially when it's time to make the rum cake. Rum for the chef, rum for the cake. Rum for the chef, rum for the cake. I kid. But, a little laugh once in a while just to get things started. And, all right. Dadgummit. In a way, I suppose, trying to avoid getting to this story, but sooner or later, we're going to. And by that, we had the Iraq Study Group report out yesterday, and we spent a considerable amount of discussion of that yesterday evening. And it was, what you thought of it, what I thought of it, some emails, some comments along the way. And then finally, perhaps the opinion that matters most significantly, the opinion of the so-called boots on the ground in Iraq. This is from an Associated Press story by Will Weissert. These are the comments of members of Company C, 1st Battalion, 37th Armored Regiment. And despite what the Iraq Study Group said about pulling troops by 2008, Specialist Eisenhower Adutasi, a 26-year-old from Westminster, California, said, "There's no way we're leaving in 2 years, no matter what any recommendation says." He went on to tell the author of the story that he thinks 2012 is more realistic. Then there was Sergeant Christopher Wiachik. He's 28, from Livonia, Michigan. Quote, "It's just a study group. It's not really going to affect the president. I don't see any major changes happening until presidential elections start. I think both sides will promise to get troops out and give timelines then, but not before." My God, Richard Johnson, Specialist Richard Johnson, 20 years old, from Bridgeport, Connecticut. "We've been here for 12 months now, and there's been no progress." The description sort of makes your eyes roll back in your head as well. He said this as he manned a machine gun on the rooftop of an outpost ringed by a shallow moat of sewage. Remember when we were talking, a week or so ago, more than a week ago, about the video footage of the little boy running, chasing the American military vehicle, begging desperately for the 1-liter bottle of water with which he was being teased? Remember that discussion? And I think it was our friend David who called in from Tennessee to talk about why he might be so desperate to have that bottle of water, that little fella. And he talked about maybe, you know, a little bit of fresh water keeping Granny alive for another day or so. And in the course of that conversation, said, God forbid, you know, he scraped or cut his foot his bare foot chasing after that vehicle. Because one puddle, running through one sewage-laden puddle, is all it'll take to bring that child to his unnatural end via something as simple as typhus, typhoid, tetanus, worms, any number of things. So I couldn't help thinking, reflecting on that when I saw that line. He said as he manned a machine gun on the rooftop of an outpost ringed by a shallow moat of sewage. Of sewage. It's like holding a child's hand. How long can you hold onto his hand before he does something on his own? Specialist Johnson said. First Lieutenant Gerard Dow said he agreed with the commission's assessment that the situation in Iraq was grave and disappointing. Lieutenant Dow said, in Iraq, we try to win the hearts and minds of population. They want Americans out of here. They blame us for all their problems. They look at us as the terrorists, and then they turn around and help the terrorists who are trying to kill us. The Iraqi army's getting there, according to Lieutenant Dow, but they're still not where they need to be, and I doubt they will be by then. Too many times they're in a selfish state of mind. Too often they're along for the ride while we do the work for them. They're only going to do the right thing if someone's watching, and they know they will be punished if they don't. It's not every soldier. I've met some great guys, but it's a lot of them. They don't care, and this is their country. He was asked if he was frustrated with the situation in Ramadi, and he said, that doesn't cover it. U.S. soldiers are dying trying to help people who don't want their help. That makes you angry. Staff Sergeant Wiacek said, we're just sitting around, not making any progress. It's annoying. You're not motivated to help anybody. He said he darn sure wouldn't re-enlist. I don't want to live my life like this, was his assessment of the situation. So, is that indicative or exemplary of every soldier in Iraq? Probably not. There are probably some guys there who would rather stay there than come home. In any military, there are always those who would rather stay amongst the carnage than live a so-called peaceful life. I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are on that. But it's just sad because it was what I was discussing last night. By suggesting that troops can't come home until 2008 or later, the Iraq Study Group signed a death warrant for perhaps 1,000 more American men and women. The only answer, and you know, I hope that at some point, if you're feeling activist oriented, you know, the 32nd activist, like Clint Borgen was telling us about last week, if you're feeling activist oriented and feel like being a 32nd or a 32nd activist, you can pick up the phone, dial your congressman, your senators, and tell them, you know, I'm so-and-so from somewhere and where. I'm your constituent. And the only solution to Iraq is to get out now. Get out now. Perhaps it's the simple elegance of the idea that is too much for these geniuses to comprehend. And you know what? You're not going to get anything different out of Robert Gates than you got out of Rummy. except maybe a little less in the way of babbling about known knowns and unknown gnomes and garden gnomes. So there you have it, the response of the troops. Now, interestingly, Lawrence Eagleburger sits on the Iraq study group and was out in front of the cameras pretty frequently yesterday as the Iraq study group report was released and ballyhooed around the media. And he had an interesting little comment. And his comment was telling. Now, this appeared in Dana Milbank's column today in the Washington Post. He writes, minutes after the Iraq study group placed an improvised explosive device beneath the Bush administration's Iraq policy yesterday, panel member Lawrence Eagleburger was asked how President Bush reacted to the recommendations. He was there for the presentation. You know, you saw the footage of Bush at the table and all the commission members sitting there with him having received the report. Now listen, this is a quote. This is not Milbank engaging in hyperbole or writing for facetious satirical effect. This is a quote from Lawrence Eagleburger. His reaction was, "Where's my drink?" The former Secretary of State cracked after the commission's White House visit to Capitol Hill and Capitol Hill news conference. Reaching for his own cola, Eagleburger continued, "He was a little loaded." It was early in the morning, too, you know. What do you think of that? Now, Dana Milbank goes on and softens the blow. The retired diplomat certainly did not mean that the president had fallen off the wagon. But if any event would call for a stiff one, this was it. Well, I'm not so sure. Do you think it would be possible? You know how things go. Would it be possible to get within a foot or two of George Bush at a morning meeting, you know, for the handshaking and thank you for your service to our country? And get a whiff of good old-fashioned bottled in bond? What do you think? I've just about come to the conclusion that, well, and how many times have we played the audio of George Bush just sounding liquored up, looking liquored up? And I'm not talking about that video of him at the wedding back before he was elected president. God Almighty. Dana Milbank describes it this way: a bipartisan group of elder statesmen, some of them friends of Bush's father no less, had just concluded that the Iraq War, the centerpiece of Bush's presidency, was a disaster with no easy way out. And so by today, you've got the dear leader out there babbling along with Tony Blair. And the best he can muster, and you know, it's scary that we've got a monosyllabic president. It's not funny. It's not humorous anymore. The best he can do is, yeah, it's bad in Iraq. And he said he's got an upcoming speech where he's going to unveil his new plan. Welcome to the new plan. Same as the old plan. Dear leader went on, I do know that we have not succeeded as fast as we wanted to succeed. I do understand that process is not as rapid as I had hoped. It's moments like this that really make you wonder if we're done. If we're just toast. If there's any getting back, if there's any turning around, if there's any if there's any recovery from the disaster that is George W. Bush. Now, the Iraq Study Group, and I don't, if you listened last night, you know, I don't put a lot of, I don't put a lot of stock or store in what it offered because it seemed sort of half-assed, if you will. On the one hand, saying, you know, we need to get out in 2008, and on the other hand, saying we need to add more troops. Not encouraging. Smells a little bit like Vietnam, doesn't it, for those of you old enough to have been through that that era. Richard Nixon had a secret plan to end the war. That secret plan was to escalate the war, to end the war, and not so much. So, well, I don't know what to say. I spent another chunk of today reading more of the because I don't like to talk about stuff that I haven't actually read, and I went back over the Iraq Study Group report again, looking, frankly, for hope. I will tell you in no uncertain terms, it wasn't there. There is no hope in this situation that does not begin with the fundamental premise of get out now. Fund the C-130s, fund the fuel for the C-5s, start flying them to Baghdad, and get out now. Oh, what's that old country song? Before the next teardrop falls? Yeah, Freddie Fender. Get out now. Before the next teardrop falls. Can you get on board with that? Is it worth the phone call to your congressman, your senator, your governor's office? You know, that's the National Guard that's over there. You know, the Iraq Study Group said we don't know if it can be turned around. Well, dear leader, still living in sunshine and violets world, he said, it makes sense to analyze the situation and to devise a set of tactics and strategies to achieve the objective that I have stated. And so, if the present situation needs to be changed, it follows that we'll change it if we want to succeed. Somebody help me. What the hell does that mean? One more time. And so, if the present situation needs to be changed, it follows that we'll change it if we want to succeed. Back to Dana Milbank. What was that line? His reaction was, "Where's my drink?" The former Secretary of State cracked after the Commission's White House visit and Capitol Hill news conference. Reaching for his own cola, Eagleburger continued, "He was a little loaded. It was early in the morning, too, you know." Now, you get the notion, if you watch Lawrence Eagleburger in a TV appearance, that you know, he's got a smart alecky streak. But what is the chance... what is the chance that the mouth that produces this, it makes sense to analyze the situation and to devise a set of tactics and strategies to achieve the objective that I've stated, and so if the present situation needs to be changed, it follows that we'll change it if we want to succeed. And they go on and he's asked whether he thinks the Iraq Study Group suggested that he didn't appreciate the extent of the violence in Iraq, and you want to know what have you seen the video? Did you see this when it the retort? He gets asked that question. It's bad in Iraq. That help?
You know, in all due respect, I've been saying it a lot. I understand how tough it is and have been telling the American people how tough it is, and they know how tough it is. Countries that participate in talks must not fund terrorism, must help the young democracy survive, must help with the economics of the country. If people are not committed, if Syria and Iran is not committed to that concept, then they shouldn't bother to show up.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you, Prime Minister Blair. Thank you.
It offers a strong way forward. I think it is important now that we concentrate on the elements that are necessary to make sure that we succeed, because the consequences of failure are severe.
God almighty, it's a tough time and it's a difficult moment for America and Great Britain, and the task before us is daunting. Are we just screwed? As long as we don't have a rock-solid commitment to doing something, i.e., get out now, as long as we think that somehow this can be made better by, a few thousand more American dead, as long as we operate under some premise that, you know, if we drive the budget deficit a little further into the blood red of its current location,
well, you know, we spent $400 billion. Maybe if we spend $300 billion more, they'll have themselves a democracy.
Who thinks like that? Do you think like that? Managing your household budget, do you think like that? We don't think like that here. How bad off are we? Maybe that's the question for tonight. Maybe that's what we spend the next 2.5 hours figuring out. How bad off are we? When we've got a president who, the best thing he can do to describe a war that has killed probably nigh unto a million innocent Iraqi civilians and 3,000 American servicemen and women and shattered countless tens of thousands of other American service personnel, and the best he can do is haul out Rodney Dangerfield, I tell you, it's tough. How screwed are we? Let's take a break. You know, your phone calls are always welcome. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email comes into Bob at headonradio.com. I think we better talk about this. This is the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at
the Head On Radio Network.
Now get back to work.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman. The steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable. And I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If he brings you happiness, then I wish you both the best. It's your happiness that matters most of all. But if he ever breaks your heart, if the teardrop ever starts, I'll be there before the next teardrop falls. Si te quieres de verdad.
I got chills.
Y te da felicidad.
You guys are great. Our good friend Billy Shears I think he had that song in my email inbox before I got the whole title out. And you know what? It's a love ballad. Did you hear those lyrics? It's more than that, isn't it? We mentioned a little bit last night, bumper sticker politics. Maybe that's another one. Before the next teardrop falls, get out now. Get out now. Yeah, I'm saying it over and over and again. I want it burned into my head. I want it burned into all of our heads. That is the only damned answer. There's no other. 2008 is unacceptable. And for this poor guy that gave the interview, who said, I think it's more like 2012. When you're sitting in Iraq and you say, I think it's more like 2012, that's a man who has pretty much consigned himself to never seeing home again, isn't it? And the question deserves to be asked, are our military men and women worth demanding that they be saved? Because the longer they stay there, the closer they get to utter annihilation. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bob calls from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Cantaloupe.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey.
Hey.
Oh, we're just having a little puppy problem here.
Oh, dear.
Well, he was giving Mommy a hard time.
Well, that's puppy's job.
He wouldn't come in the house, and he was doing something he wasn't supposed to do, and wouldn't go in the kennel after he got in here, so I had to go out there. But, hey, your intro to this this evening is quite interesting, because I sat down with I'd call him a shipmate, but he wasn't one of mine, okay?
Yeah.
And he served on a sub tender back there in, the Reagan era, and when I was up doing other things. And there was a young man there, and his thing was, his daddy's a Democrat, and I'm a Democrat, Steve and I were, I come in into the garage there to get some work done on my Chevy, and hey, Bob, and he's right there, just at my beck and call, because he agrees with me on just about everything that I talk about. Well, this boy, Larry, I'll call him, okay?
Okay.
That's his first name, and he was back there, and he's always been a staunch Republican. And I was there, and it was over lunch. I was having the puppy down to groomer and stuff, and so the puppy was getting groomed, and my pickup was getting worked on. They were doing some changing out some stuff and setting some things up for winter. And we're sitting there, and I wasn't sitting there with him until Larry calls me over. Hey, Bob, he says, you want some pizza? And I says, I'm not supposed to have pizza, but by golly, I'll have some with you, And I went up there and had this, taco pizza. I never had one.
Oh, those are good.
Yeah, well, it was, and salsa sauce, and it was just like, oh, yeah, it's like south of the border. We got to talking about some stuff that went down during the Reagan and the Bush one administration. Yeah, I remember them well. But anyway, speaking to your beginning, your rant, I guess it would be called, huh?
Yeah,
about these boys and girls that are in Iraq and how so many people, they have no connection with anything. They're not connected to the real world. They're connected to some, fanciful thing. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how they think. And what you said there, it was like, from what piece of unreality do they come? Where do they get their ideas like this bush monkey that sits up there on the hill and right there in that people's house and tries to dictate to us? And this boy, he has voted nothing but Republican since forever, right? And he said, Bob, he says, I voted a straight Democratic ticket for the first time in my life. And I looked him square in the eye and I said, it's about time you woke up. You still there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
I heard a click on the line. Maybe it was Agent Fred again.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Anyway, he said, I voted a straight Democratic ticket because I'm so sick of this Iraq war. I'm so sick of it, he says. I'm so sick of hearing about it. I'm so sick of the deaths. And I said, why weren't you sick about it before started like I was when I told you this is the wrong thing, the wrong war, the wrong time in the wrong place. And I told Larry that back there when they started this thing. This is just total stupidity. But he didn't. He was, no, we gotta avenge 9/11. I says, where and how and when and why should we even avenge 9/11? It was done by what? 15 Saudis and, you know, a few other.
Yeah, if that's the scenario you buy.
So who do you attack? You know, so you attack a country that did not attack us to avenge 9/11 against a religious group? Come on, let's get serious here, Bob. Let's think with our heads. You know, let's use that thing God gave us for something other than a hat rack, I told him. Because you people, you Republicans, you conservatives, you people that think that way, that you have to avenge something, first you have to know what you're avenging. And, you know, there was no investigation. No one looked into who actually did 9/11. No one even kept any evidence of it. It was all destroyed. It was shipped to China to be melted down and sent back to us as trinkets. So, who on this green earth? And I won't give it to God anymore. It's not God's green earth, because God has nothing to do with this earth. He took one look at it a long time ago and said, "What?" and walked away. He moved off into the universe and created something so much more beautiful than this planet, because the people on this planet are so enamored with themselves that they can't even look down there to old Sarge in Mississippi and say, oh my God, we owe those people. They are our brethren. They're our brethren. They're our brothers, our sisters. And they're suffering so. No, we have to worry about how much a gallon of gas is going to cost us to put into our SUV. Come on, Bob, let's get real. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do, Bob. And the question, there's so much in what you just said that if we start at the beginning and work forward, I don't know anybody, Bob, that I think thinks. Like these Washington insiders who discuss wars in sort of sterile academic terms. I don't know anybody like that, because most of the people I know, they've got a neighbor, they've got a friend, they got somebody who's actually over there. So it's impossible for them to discuss it in detached, sterile academic terms.
Well, Steve, the young man, he got really, really riled. He got real angry. And he stood up and he looked right at Larry and he said, there was a young man in here the other day having his unit fixed, his vehicle. And he pulled up his pant leg and he said, and he said he didn't have a leg because he lost it in Iraq. He said, how many of you feel for him or care about him? I know Bob does, he said, but I don't think the rest of you even realize that he was here. And that was a man that gave a leg, and he's got a messed up hand, and he's in his 30s, he's a young man, and he teared up and he was angry. He said, how many of you guys right here? And I was sitting down with some mechanics and some techs and, you know, guys that work on vehicles, is how many of you care about that young man that came in here that gave a leg and a hand for you? How many of you do? And they just looked down at the floor. And I was proud of him, because he said it like it had to be said. He's a Democrat. I love the boy. He's a good guy. So, you understand, there are some of us out here that know what we're giving up, and we're were giving up not dollars, not the millions or billions or trillions. We're giving up our heart and our soul and our sons and our daughters, and that is more important, Bob. The love that we give up, the people that are lost, those people mean something to all of us. They can't mean something just to their immediate family. They have to mean something to each and every American, because every American and every Iraqi that dies is a worthy human being that has worth and has worthwhile. They have meaning to their people, and they have meaning to the world. And everyone that we take, every life that's lost, is our responsibility as American citizens. And we must stop this juggernaut of insanity that has gripped this country, and we must stop it now. There's no time for this BS commission. There's no time for this BS Bush administration. There's no time for it, Bob. We either stop it now or it drags us into hell where they're headed. They'll take us all with them, and the nation will become nothing. The United States will die, and we will never, ever give to our grandchildren what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln strove and worked and died to give us. So it is our responsibility to take the mantle and just say no more, no more. We will accept no more, and we will fight, and we will fight with everything we got, every sinew in our bodies, to bring this nation back before it is too late.
Well, Bob, what has to happen, and this being December 7th, I think it's worthwhile to mention, what's going on in Iraq has to become real in the imagination of this country. And by imagination, I don't mean, you know, making stuff up, but the American people have to start visualizing, have to start using their minds to imagine the horror of that knock on the door.
Like I said, you know, use your head for something other than a damn hat rack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, wake up, smell a coffee, and then go to work, okay? And then realize that our work is not done until we give back what we have taken. And we have taken too much from Iraq. We have taken too much from the Vietnamese. We have taken too much from the world. It's time that we give back. And the only way we can do that is work for peace. And you start by just peace is not a... peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Peace is not disgraceful.
No, peace is what was that Palestinian carpenter asked us to grant. He said, render unto Caesar what Caesar's, but give unto God what's God. But he also said something about, you know, if a man strikes you on one cheek, then offer him the other. And they have distorted every word of decency that Jesus Christ, this Palestinian carpenter that came on earth to give men that message, they have distorted it, and they have twisted it, and they have made it into something that it never was. And yet they think they have a conduit to him. It's impossible to cover everything that's in my heart tonight, Bob, but I do wish that during this season that we connect not only with Jesus or with Allah or with God or with Muhammad or whomever, whichever prophet offered you this message of peace, goodwill, and love, then accept the fact that you cannot love someone when you're murdering them. And if you cannot...
You know, that's such a simple concept,
yeah.
Bob. I get it, you get it. Everybody listening to this program gets it. Why don't the bespoke suit and French cuff the silk knotted necktie crowd in Washington D.C. get it? Why don't they get it, Bob?
Well, okay, you really want a simple answer to that question?
Well, yeah, I kind of do.
Okay, here's a simple answer. You cannot love unless you have been loved. And I do not believe that George Bush has ever been loved. I don't believe that those silk suit people have ever really known real love. Or that person in their life that would rather give to them than take from them. So they've learned to take. I mean, I've heard many people speak about Barbara, the old
beast.
I will not say what I really believe.
No, we just call her that old beast.
Yeah, the old beast has said and done to that boy when he was just a toddler. I don't think she ever held him in her close to her and just loved him, because if he's not loved, how can he give love? And I don't believe his papa knows love of anything other than his greed and his corporate, you know, buddies and his cronies and his money. And they love money, Bob, but they do not love in the same sense as a person that knows real love. Because to me, Bob, money is just grease. It makes the wheels go. It doesn't exist. It's just like putting grease on your wheels. When it wears out, you get some more and put some more grease in there. And it keeps the wheels on the wagon going so it don't fall off halfway across the prairie and get stuck in North Dakota. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The guys that, you know, I heard it said that, you know, there was them people they called settlers, okay? And they was crossing the prairie and the wheels fell out the wagon. Well, we can't go no further. I guess we'll just settle here, you know. So they call them settlers. They settled for wherever they broke down because they didn't have enough grease to cover the wagon to get them across the prairie to get them to California for the gold field.
Never thought of it that way, but it makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's common sense, and common sense is something this nation is lacking sorely. Common sense, Bob. And the thing is, you and what you guys do head on are great. You're wonderful people, and I love you dearly. I really do. And I'm trying to tell my take on this thing, and I take it from a different spot. I see people, you know, not as objects, but as pawns that have been pushed around and used so badly that they don't know that they're pawns anymore. They don't know they're being taken advantage of, and they just go with the flow because that's where the flow goes. Well, sometimes you have to swim against the stream, and you have to stop long enough to take a look at where the stream is taking you. And Bob, this stream is taking us straight into that, over that abyss and into that empty space.
I can see a historian 200-300 years from now looking back and saying, well, you know, the fall of America began when they started the war in Iraq. I mean, I can see that. You know, we, and you know far better than I, that there were a lot of people who ran around babbling about domino theories.
Oh,
a few decades ago.
You want to talk about when the fall of America started? The fall of America started when we stopped acting as community, Bob. When we stop thinking,
about
West Virginia as part of North Dakota. When North Dakota started thinking about, well, gee, we're more important than South Dakota. When West Virginia had to, you know, and then the greedy come in, and we disconnected. I think somewhere back in the 30s, back in the 1930s, when the disconnection started, and. And then this guy by the name of Franklin Delano Roosevelt came along, and he put the nation back on the right track, and it got these off-trackers, the ones that they want to go in a different direction, but they don't know what direction they're going. They have no real plan to where they're going to go, but they know that if they get there, they will have won. Well, you can't win Iraq. You can't win a war that is not a war. And this is not a war, Bob. You've said it countless times. This is an occupation. we have done the same thing to Iraq that Nazi Germany did to Poland and to Czechoslovakia and to all of Europe, and they tried to do it to a country that we called the Soviet Union, but it was Russia at the time, and they tried to do it to Russia, and Russia whooped their butt. Well, guess what? Iraq is America's Russia. You cannot win in Iraq, and the only thing you're going to do is lose, lose, lose. There's no win. So the only thing that, you know, Germany really finally realized is to get out of there, but they got out too late, and the Russians followed them home, and the Russians destroyed them more than the Americans did. The Russians ended World War II when they took
Berlin.
Yeah. They ended it right there. But yet we think that we won World War II. The only thing we did
was... We're running out of time, Bob.
Yeah.
But you're verging onto a topic that is of greater significance, and that is this notion that, well, you know, we started the war in Iraq, and the war in Iraq isn't going so well, but, you know, we can't just leave Iraq, because we have to win. You know, we like to tell people that, and you know, ask the average head for a hat rack American who won World War II. We did!
No, we didn't. We didn't even win World War One.
Yeah, how many Russians died pushing the Germans back from Stalingrad?
Yeah, how many? Yeah. How many Russians died in their tens of thousands?
Millions.
We lost what, 500,000 in World War II?
Yeah, and the butcher's bill for the Russians was something on the order of 30 million?
Yeah. Yeah.
Million.
Okay. Yeah.
You know?
Million. To our 500,000, and we think that we won World War II? No. We used the Russians as,
you know, that's
our,
yeah, that's every,
you know, as our cannon fodder.
That's every person in the state of West Virginia, every person in the state of North Dakota, every person in the state of South Dakota, every person in the state of Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa. You know, if we think on those kinds of, but again,
we owe it to the millions of Russian dead. Yes, we do. We owe them a debt of gratitude. But you see, they changed, they turned that into a red menace, and they turned it in the late 40s and late.
Well, it was good for business, Bob. It was good for business.
It was spin, Bob. It was spin. They turned our ally into our enemy, and they did it purposefully, and it was not something, and so it started back then, okay? I mean, we talked once about a man, a gentleman that had won two medals of honor. And his name was Smedley D. Butler, and he warned you about this.
War is a racket, sure.
Yeah, he warned you about it way back before you were born.
You know, and there, like I said, we got a roll, but... God, Bob, there's 600 different directions we could go with everything that you've brought to the table tonight, and maybe we get to a few of them.
I hope you do, and I hope the American people wake up and smell goddamn coffee before it boils over and burns on the stove.
Yeah, burnt coffee sucks.
You bet it does.
All right, you take care, Bob.
Love you much. Love to Agnes and the gang.
All right, thanks.
Okay,
bye. Bye now. Well, there's two or three shows worth of topics. Wow. Let's do the news and come back. Jump on in. Get involved with this. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any need for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet.
Wow. Quality News Network. President Bush met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair today, one day after the Iraq Study Group released its report. Mr. Bush continues to assert coalition forces will prevail in Iraq. However, the president did acknowledge the situation is bad, the task daunting. In Iraq, yesterday was one of the deadliest for U.S. forces. 11 Americans were killed in separate attacks. In the first week of December, at least 31 American troops have died. In Baghdad today, at least 23 people, including two college professors and a small child, were killed in a series of attacks. In Camp Pendleton, California, an April court-martial has been set for the Marine charged with being the leader in the abduction and murder of an Iraqi grandfather a year ago. Four of his comrades in the alleged murder pleaded guilty to lesser charges in exchange for lesser sentences. In London, Alexander Litvinenko was buried today. Litvinenko, a critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, died by radiation poisoning. Scotland Yard says he was murdered. In Moscow, a Russian businessman is now in a coma. He is a key part of the investigation into Litvinenko's murder. In London, at the hotel where Litvinenko met a contact the day he became ill, seven employees have also tested positive for radiation. Worldwide, the number of journalists imprisoned for their work in newspapers, radio, and television has set a record. For the second year in a row, online reporters and bloggers represent one out of three journalists in jail. In Washington, the Bush administration announced it may drop significant standards for air pollution by dumping restrictions on the lead in gasoline. The government's curb on lead content in gasoline is widely considered a major victory in preventing air pollution. Industry has lobbied Mr. Bush to change the EPA regulations. Today is the 65th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Nearly 500 survivors gathered in Hawaii today to commemorate that day of infamy. Many veterans now in their 80s say this may be the last time they will be able to gather together. And today, gold closed at $638.50 an ounce. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
NASA has prepared the Space Shuttle Discovery for a nighttime launch tonight, although bad weather may intervene. NASA has scotched the chance of a takeoff tomorrow. A federal advisory panel says heart stents that are drug-coated offer enough benefits as to outweigh possible problems with blood clots. The FDA says more study is needed. The Iraq Study Group's report on Iraq is available for sale and has quickly become a bestseller. It's already number 4 at the Barnes & Noble website and number 10 on Amazon.com's list of best-selling books. The Labor Department reported today a drop in the number of unemployment claims filed last week, the largest drop in 6 months. The total, at least 324,000 Americans out of work. A $14.5 million civil settlement has been reached between Hewlett-Packard and the California Attorney General, stemming from the so-called media spying scandal. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.73 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 31 points at 12,278. The NASDAQ down 18 points at 2427. The S&P 500 down 6 at 1407. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Senators and representatives, I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. That I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
And that is that. Most times in the newscasts, all you hear is the snippet about a day that will live in infamy. I don't know if most people know that there was a full speech. Now, I found it. I thought it would be valuable to run the entire speech. Why is it valuable? Because it is a lesson. It lives in history. FDR was right. The day itself lives in infamy. And the words he used to describe it, things like dastardly, are wholly applicable. But you see, that's December the 8th. That is Monday, December the 8th, in front of a joint session of Congress, the President of the United States respecting the separation of powers that are embodied within the Constitution of the United States, going to the Congress to ask Congress to do what Congress is empowered to do. And you'll notice that last sentence, he doesn't say, "I demand that the Congress declare."
or I command that the Congress declare, or I compel the Congress to declare. He says, I ask that the Congress declare. Because this was not a unitary executive. It gets a little harder, it seems, as time goes on, and we have the speeches of the great people who have led this nation. It gets a little bit more difficult every time I play one of these things. It is heartrending to play the words of Martin Luther King. It is heartrending to play the words of John F. Kennedy. It is heartrending to play the words of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it is heartrending to play those words because you cannot play them without comparing them to that thing that sits in the White House today. FDR had as much power as any president up to that time. And yet he still followed the mandate of the Constitution and requested Congress to take action. It was unlikely to a point of almost mathematical impossibility that the Congress would not declare war against the Empire of Japan. And yet, because of the separation of powers, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had to acknowledge that that possibility did in fact exist. Because he himself, as the chief executive, and yes, indeed, as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, did not have the power to commit this nation to a war. And he knew it, and he respected it. Compare that, oh God, compare that to what we got, what was it, October of 2002? Now, I know that the right-wing yammerheads like to make comparisons to World War. They used to like to make comparisons to World War II between Iraq and World War II until Dick Cheney said, no, this isn't anything like World War II about a week and a half ago. They like to say things like, well, we lost thousands of men on June 6, 1944, and these peaceniks that we have now, well, they'd be screaming for us to capitulate to Hitler. And frankly, that is just so much insulting crap. Because there is no comparison whatsoever between then and now. There is no comparison between a patrician giga millionaire like FDR, who took the reins of a nation when the nation was reeling from the effects of 12 long years of Republican mismanagement. I'll never forget my grandmother's description of the Hoover administration. She said the Republicans promised us three meals a day, and we got them. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. But it was FDR who took the reins of that government, and the Republicans howled and squealed that he was being a despot. But on the day when it became necessary for us to rouse ourselves and respond to that unprovoked and dastardly attack, he proved himself not a millionaire, not a patrician, but first and foremost an American who respected more than anything else the tenets of the United States Constitution. And you cannot say that.
You cannot say that about George W. Bush. What did he say? What did he call it? It's just a goddamn piece of paper. Isn't that how he described the Constitution? Do you remember? And yeah, it boils in my belly when I remember the people who lined up and said, "We're going to give you authority to go to war, George." And of course, now the revisionism says, yeah, I know they voted for the war, but they didn't vote to let him go to war right then. They just said he could use force. John Kerry, John Edwards, Joe Lieberman, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden. The list goes on and on of the senators who did, and of the members of the House who did as well. Now, I have a lot of differences with Senator Robert C. Byrd, mainly because he is not liberal enough to suit me in a time when he should know better. But he did stand up and say that the Senate was giving away its own authority. Because the Constitution is very, very clear. If the president wants to make war on someone, if he wants to start the war on someone, or defend this nation on a war that has already been started, it makes no difference in the eyes of the Constitution. There is one way and one way only for doing that. And that is to go to the Congress of the United States in joint session assembled and ask them for a congressional declaration of war. No other way. And within the scope of their legacies, it will be to the undying shame of the John Kerrys and the John Edwardses and the Hillary Clintons and every single member of the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives who voted to grant George Bush the authority to do an end run on the Constitution of the United States of America and make war without a declaration thereof. You would think we would have learned our lesson from the War Powers Act and the way it was abused by the Reagan administration, but we did not. You would think we would have learned our lesson from Vietnam and Richard Nixon and LBJ and, yes, even John Kennedy. But we did not. And for future presidents beyond George W. Bush, the precedent has been created that the Constitution may be simply ignored. And the right to make war is vested now in one lone individual, the chief executive, instead of in the deliberative body of this country, the legislative body, the Congress. If you read the Federalist Papers, you know that there is a very, very good reason why the framers of the Constitution chose to place the power to make and declare war in the Congress. Fresh in their minds was the memory of George III. And they thought it far better that as momentous a decision as whether or not to commit a nation to war should be made with as many minds as possible working it over. It is heartrending to read the text of a speech like FDR's December 8th, 1941 address to the joint session of Congress. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. What carefully chosen words those are. I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people. They didn't have time in 2002 to interpret the will of Congress and of the people. Wolfowitz and Pearl, Rice and Rummy, Cheney and Hadley didn't even have time to adequately interpret the intelligence data that we had received and that they had already been told was absolutely wrong. They saw an opportunity for what they thought would be monstrous wealth and power and prestige, and they had no time except to grab it. And now, tired old men like Lawrence Eagleburger and James Baker and Lee Hamilton and Edwin Meese come along and say, well, you know, the situation in Iraq is getting grave. Hate that participial form. It was grave before the first finger touched the first button that launched the first Tomahawk cruise missile of shock and awe. And what I was talking about with Bob a little bit ago, we heard during Vietnam about the domino theory. Well, you know, if Vietnam falls to the commies, well, then, you know, next it'll be California. We are living smack dab in the middle of the real domino theory. The real domino theory is Iraq. That domino has fallen. Others are now falling as we speak. You work in construction? Priced concrete lately? How about drywall? How about plywood? It's all through the roof. And not because it's suddenly scarce from the supplier, but because it's suddenly scarce by virtue of its being shipped to try to fix the things that we deliberately broke in Iraq. How about the domino that has fallen and left us with the unitary executive? John McCain has the absolute flop sweats at the thought of having that unitary executive power. By God, if we can just hold out, if we can just hold out till 2008, John McCain will get in there and he'll put 500,000 Americans into harm's way in Iraq, if that's what he thinks it takes. You got to remember, John McCain's daddy and granddaddy were real military men, ship's captains, admirals, strategists. All John McCain ever did, and he was the black sheep of his family for doing so, he admits it himself, all he ever did was fly an airplane 40,000 feet over grass huts in Vietnam and blow away little girls and little boys and men and women and children from 40,000 feet. That's all John McCain did. And he did it with no conscience whatsoever. Never gave a thought to that little girl from the famous photograph running naked down the road on fire from the napalm that wouldn't get off her skin. John McCain dropped napalm. And he wants that unitary executive power. He wants that unitary executive power so badly, that he has hired, I kid you not, he has hired the very same man who produced the Bob Corker
Harold, call me
ads to be his campaign manager. That's Terry Nelson. I'm honored to have Terry's leadership and management expertise as we move forward through this process, said McCain. I know if we decide to take the next step, the day-to-day management of the campaign will be in capable hands. These are upper-level Bush functionaries. John Weaver, McCain's lead political strategist, said, Terry and Brian add great strength to our existing team. He's talking about Brian Jones, who will be the press officer. They are both committed to running the type of campaign the American people expect from someone like John. And it was, in fact, Terry Nelson, no kidding, who brought us the jungle drums that beat every time the name of Harold Ford Jr. was mentioned. Terry Nelson brought you the little bare-shouldered cutie who said,
I met Harold at a Playboy party. Harold, call me.
Got any idea what 2008's going to look like? Got any idea how absolutely imperative it is that each and every one of us do anything that we can, whatever we can, by whatever legal means necessary to stop the war before John McCain even remotely has a chance to get his hands on it and turn it into World War 6 7/8? There's a domino falling on us right now, and we either let it crush us, or we try to hold it up until others can get underneath it and push it back. Iraq is a Pandora's box whose some effect we haven't even begun to calculate yet. How many billions of dollars so far? How many hundreds of billions of dollars so far? A half a trillion dollars so far? Because that awful, awful little man said, I have lost my patience. And he tried to kill my daddy. That is where we are. Tonight, tomorrow night, and every night until this war ends. And until this war ends, you're not safe. I'm not safe. My children, your grandchildren, your entire posterity, 200 years, the next 200 years of American history are not safe. Until George Bush is reined in, removed from office, and his war brought to a close. No phased withdrawals, no peace with honor, no, none of that superfluous, florid prose. I've got an email here from our good friend Billy Shears. He wrote in to say, with regard to the Iraq study group, he said, why do we allow the right to label liberals? He said, here's my Iraq study. Cut and run. That's right. Cut the crap and let our people run home to their families. Yeah. Cut and run. Cut and run. You ever seen a returning serviceman or woman, the minute that they step down to the from the last step on the aircraft, and they finally got their feet back on American soil? What do they do? What do they do when they see the little baby that was born after they left? What do they do when they see the 5-year-old sitting on top of mommy's shoulders? Oh, baby, they run. They run as hard as their legs can go to get to that family that they sat wondering for months, if not years, whether or not they would ever see again. Let our troops run. Let them run to mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, children, grandchildren. Let them run. Because we don't have an FDR in the White House. We have a GWB. And GWB is not fit to stand in the shadows of FDR. And he is the most grave danger that this nation has known in recent memory. There is not a terrorist in the Middle East. There is not an Al-Qaeda fighter in Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan who is more dangerous to this nation than George W. Bush. He is dangerous to your health. He is dangerous to your wallet. He is dangerous to your future. He is, in fact, the most dangerous man on earth. Right? Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Hanging in there. I wonder how many of the FDR speech is stirring and wonderful and constitutional, even. But how many people know the reason why the Japanese went to war?
Well, it depends on which reason you're talking about.
No, the root one. When you get past the parties, the militarists, you know, all the other shenanigans, the basic root cause.
You mean oil?
Oil.
You mean the need for the Indonesian and Malaysian and the Dutch East Indies oil fields?
Yeah.
Japan and the rubber
oil,
and
they wanted it.
And the rubber plantations of Vietnam?
So you see, that's why I put on, by the way, there's a link on the show post about, you know, to the military history that will show people where this oil starved thing caused Japan's invasion.
Right.
But the whole thing was all because they wanted oil, and gee, history repeats itself, don't it?
Again and again and again to the damned
fools. Paying attention.
Yeah, well, to the damned fools who are more concerned with achieving their own power than they are with leading a nation or representing a nation.
Mm-hmm.
I got another story here. I'll get to it in a little bit about people who were elected to office but don't want to do the job of the office.
Yeah, and as far as the terrorists in, you mentioned the terrorists in the Middle East. The biggest terrorist on this planet at this time is named George W. Bush.
Yes.
Now, if they get bread doesn't like that, well, that's tough. He's going to have to live with it. It's true.
Well, these aren't. This is not opinion. When we talk about George Bush this way, Susan, we're not talking because it's our opinion. We are talking this way because it is fact.
Yeah.
And we can, if called upon to do so, we can lay out fact after fact after fact after fact for why that is true. How many people are dead in Darfur? Can you recall offhand?
Oh, it keeps going up.
Yeah, it does, and it's up in horrifying numbers.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Nope.
The numbers of George Bush's dead civilians, men, women, and children in Iraq rival the numbers from Darfur.
Yeah. And, you see, nobody pays attention about Darfur because they don't have any oil.
I know.
It's like nobody pays attention to North Korea. They don't have any oil. But let Iran think about using nuclear power, even if that is a stupid idea, to get, boost their economy. Oh, man. Everybody has a hissy fit.
Because there's a, there's a racial element to this, too.
Yeah. And it's just, I wish we could get rid of this oil thing. I really do. If we could just convert. Now, I know it would take too much, but, if wishes were horses.
Yeah.
There is a new posting on the blog. It is a letter from Stan Goff, and I urge people to go and read it. It is it's a letter from Stan Goff, Hold On to Your Humanity, an open letter to GIs in Iraq. And I'm sure you probably read it, but it's very, very powerful, and considering some of the things that are going down in Iraq, maybe somebody will pass it on to somebody in serving
them. Well, it would be beneficial to do so.
Because it's needed. We don't need this, what's coming out of there. We need your guys home. You've got the bumper sticker right. Get out.
Yeah.
Two words. Get out.
Get out now.
Okay, three words. I'll give you three.
Yeah, because, if you just give them get out, we're talking about weasels, and weasels look for weasel room.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, okay, we'll get out. That's what the Iraq study group thing is, Susan. We'll get out someday, somehow, sometime.
They do the Cambodian option.
Yeah.
Which means turn around and bomb the snot out of them. After committing more troops. Been there, done that. I'm not buying it.
Well, but, as long as the greatest danger, Susan, is silence.
Well, let me put it this way. My congressional delegation, and it's starting to be getting that way with others, because I'm not limiting myself to just my state. They're starting to know me by name.
Good. Because that's the other thing. We have to put our good names on the line for this stuff.
And if you say to yourself, I can't afford the phone call, crap, download something called Skype, get a headset, and have at it. That's what I do. Doesn't cost me a dime.
Right.
So you don't have the excuse of not being able to afford the long distance call.
Well, and the thing, there's another calculus to that too, Susan, and that is if you think you can't afford the call,
you're not really interested.
Well, it's not, no, and if you can't afford the call, then your failure to act sort of puts you in the same boat with the people who say, well, I will leave someday.
Yeah. Well, I would dearly love to leave. I'm just stuck here because economics. However, I'm two hours...
No. I'm talking about Iraq.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
We'll leave someday. You know, we'll leave after a phased redeployment.
Oh, give me a break. Phased redeployment.
They hide behind words.
Yeah, that's a crock. And I make no bones about telling people it's a crock. Only I'm not quite that polite. It's not true. It's weasel wording. And they're just trying to hide behind it. And if McCain has actually, I don't doubt you, if when McCain hired the guy who made those racist commercials, I have two questions for him. How are you going to explain that to your daughter,
who mm-hmm.
is not exactly white? And secondly, Bob, you just guaranteed I won't vote for you for dog catcher.
Yeah. I don't understand the McCain mystique to begin with.
I don't.
And don't profess to.
I never thought he was all that great to begin with, but he just guaranteed I'll never vote for him. And how is he going to explain that to his kid?
I'm scared to death of the man. Now, my personal theory, as I've said on a number of times on this program, my personal theory is that John McCain is being set up for the last great, big, grandiose Bush family screwing. The last one they can really deliver to him, but this one is going to go deep, and the blade is going to break off. They've screwed him time and time and time again, and still he comes back and he shakes hands with George Bush, and he was the Arizona co-campaign chair in 2004 after the nasty things they said about that precious little child. And he said, hit me again, George, and put some stank on it.
Yeah.
And this last one, the 2008 run, this last one is going to be the final indignity.
Yeah, he's probably going to be set up to be the patsy for the Democrat who's going to walk into the White House and just stomp all over him.
And, you know, that's got its... I want a Democrat in the office. But they are hell-bent on making sure that whatever they... Never mind that whole thing about, the Clintons came through and took all the W's off the keyboards.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to, the Bush administration, when they leave, are going to take the knobs off the doors.
The artwork off the walls, the whole nine yards.
The silverware, everything.
Yeah.
And they're going to, and they won't take the W's off the keyboards, they'll take the keyboards.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that. Yep.
They'll spike the hard drives and make it, this isn't going to be a peaceful transition of power. I've had calls from people who said, you know, I'm not sure that George Bush will actually leave office in January 2009.
I'm not either. I'm fully expecting him to pull Bob a Doc.
But I don't see that as a likelihood. But what I do see is them transitioning to a Democrat and doing everything in their power to make sure that things continue apace. This is so deep a topic, Susan, because you got to understand they cannot hand power over in such a way that a Democrat can actually do the things that Democrats want to do.
Yes.
Whether it be universal health care, raises in the minimum wage, treating immigrants like human beings, everything that a Democrat would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to try to preemptively destroy before the Bush administration ever leaves office. And that includes a budget deficit that precludes any kind of social spending, because we are throwing all of our treasure down the rat hole that is Iraq.
Yeah.
And the Iraq Study Group made it absolutely certain that that rat hole will remain open for George Bush to throw more money into.
Well, the last I heard, the Iraq Study Group does not have the force of law, and as far as I'm concerned, when Congress gets sworn in, they ought to start looking at people to
looking for Republicans that they can get on board to get a veto-proof Senate at, for at least one bill and then defund that sucker.
Well, I hope it happens. If I was the down on my knees praying type, you may rest assured, Susan, I would already be there.
That.
But all I have right now is hope, and it is slim hope.
Yeah, I have three major hopes: defund the war, outlaw those god awful machines. Not only outlaw them, destroy them, and enforce Sherman antitrust.
Well, we could restore habeas corpus while we're at it.
Yeah, that too.
Okay, we're up to four.
Make it four. Because once you have that, you got it all. You can get the minimum wage back up. You can get the whole nine yards. But, you know, especially the voting machines and Sherman antitrust. Because if you get Sherman antitrust, these big conglomerates, especially the entertainment ones, you know, the television news, down the tube. They get busted up.
Well,
they define the word monopoly.
Yeah, of course, net neutrality falls into the into that list of stuff to do as well.
We need to keep at least something. By the way, I don't know who it was that called in with that IP flipper so that you could go to sites without having to worry about Big Brother. I lost my copy when I had to reformat my hard drive.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so if somebody happens to have it...
The IP flipper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if somebody happens to have it and wants to send it in... I would love
it. If they'll shoot it to me at bob@headonradio.com, I'll make sure that you get it.
Blessings upon you. Well, I'm going to let you go.
Okay, Susan, thank you so much. Thank you for all your thoughts. Thank you for thank you for being there. Thank you for caring. And thank you for the work that you do. I know we're all of limited resources, but if you're sitting there and you're burning up a telephone line and you're letting these elected, not leaders, but elected representatives know where we want this nation to go, then you serve as an example and an inspiration to everybody else.
That's what I'm supposed to be doing. And as far as the horn is concerned, what I do on the horn, I'm not just helping you, I'm helping me. It gives me a voice.
Well, that's what we're trying. And the more people who learn to use that voice, the more likely it is we can accomplish some of the things that you've just talked about that you want out of the Democratic Congress.
In other words, talk a lot, people. It helps. It really helps.
Thanks, Susan.
You have a nice night.
You too.
Give Agnes a kiss.
I will.
Bye.
Several of them, as a matter of fact. Bye. So, yeah, we're coming up on top of the hour. Check in with the news again. Maybe we'll hear another story about the Bush administration wanting to gut the Clean Air Act. Oh, yeah, that one's in the stack, too. Did you catch that? It was prominently displayed over at WD40.com today. The Bush administration has declared that since we've gotten most of the lead out of the air, we can get rid of the provisions of the law that forbid lead in gasoline. Do your screaming during the news and then, hopefully catch a breath and pick up the phone. 877-443-2366 is the number. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Come, they told me, ba-rum-ba-thum-thum. A newborn king to see, ba-rum-ba-thum-thum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-rum-ba-thum-thum. Rum-ba-thum-thum, rum-ba-thum-thum. Peace on earth, can it be? Years from now, perhaps we'll see.
our finest gifts we bring of glory. See the day King come from us of living peace, so peace on earth when we come. Every child must be made aware. Every child must be made to care. Care enough for his fellow man to give all the love that he can.
I pray my wish will come true for my child and your child too.
This is the Quality News Network. In the wake of a highly critical report from the Iraq Study Group, President Bush acknowledges the situation is bad, the task daunting. He met at the White House today with British Prime Minister Tony Blair. In Iraq yesterday was one of the deadliest for U.S. forces. 11 Americans were killed in separate attacks. In the first week of December, at least 31 American troops have died. In Baghdad, at least 23 people, including two college professors and a small child, were killed today in a series of attacks. In Camp Pendleton, California, an April court-martial has been set for the Marine charged with being the leader in the abduction and murder of an Iraqi grandfather a year ago. Four of his comrades in the alleged murder pleaded guilty to lesser charges in exchange for lesser sentences. In northern London, a freak tornado today injured six and left hundreds homeless. In London, Alexander Litvinenko was buried today. Litvinenko, a critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, died 2 weeks ago of radiation poisoning. Scotland Yard says he was murdered. In Moscow, a Russian businessman is now in a coma. He is a key part of the investigation into Litvinenko's murder. In London, at the hotel where Litvinenko met a contact the day he became ill, seven employees have also tested positive for radiation. Worldwide, the number of journalists imprisoned for their work in newspapers, radio, and television has set a record. For the second year in a row, online reporters and bloggers represent one out of three journalists in jail. In Washington, the Bush administration announced it may drop significant standards for air pollution by dumping restrictions on the lead in gasoline. The government's curb on lead content in gasoline is widely considered a major victory in preventing air pollution. Industry has lobbied Mr. Bush to change the EPA regulations. In West Virginia, investigators say a lightning strike caused an explosion last year that killed a dozen Sago miners. The lightning bolt ignited methane gas in the mine. Today is the 61st anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Nearly 500 survivors gathered in Hawaii today to commemorate the Day of Infamy. Many veterans now in their 80s say this may be the last time they will be able to gather together. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business are next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The Ebola virus has caused a massive die-out in a threatened species of gorillas in the northwestern region of the Congo. The animals have been brought even closer to extinction as a result of commercial hunting for wealthy Japanese and Western tourists. International scientists said today malaria helps spread AIDS, especially in Africa, the continent hardest hit by both blood-borne diseases. MasterCard today won a lawsuit against FIFA, the world body governing soccer. FIFA had wanted to switch its multi-million-dollar sponsorship to Visa. The court said MasterCard should be able to continue its highly lucrative sponsorship until 2014. For the first time, a major study says there are more poor people in suburbs than in inner-city environments. The Brookings Institute says there are more than 12 million U.S. suburbanites living in poverty. A $14.5 million civil settlement has been reached between Hewlett-Packard and the California Attorney General. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $62.77 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 31 points at 12,278. The Nasdaq down 18 at 2427. The S&P 500 down 6 at 1407. And at the end of trading day, gold was $638.50 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
5.5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. We've got another 55 minutes or so of compelling conversation radio to go yet, of which you can be a part. You know the number, 877-443-2366. And right now we go straight to the phones, our good friend David calling from the great state of Maine. David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, I liked George W. Bush's report better. He said it's very bad in Iraq. That's all I need to know.
that's enough.
I know. I mean, I can't even. I can believe he said that, but I can't believe he thinks that was the ideal thing to say. What happened to his winning statement? I guess that went out the window.
Yeah, and they've run out of corners to turn too.
You know what they should have done? They should have drawn a picture of a giant devil with a hell mouth on the page, and then they should have faxed it to everybody.
You know, there are times when I think that George Bush is straight out of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
I love that show.
Oh, I do too. And I've got this vision of George Bush as Shake.
Yeah, Shake. Oh man, I thought Hillary couldn't top herself, but today she did, Bob.
With the violent video game thing.
Yeah. I just thought to myself, I thought, how out of touch are you? What land are you living in?
Well, you know, we've got to be reminded that she's a domestic policy expert as well.
That's true, but I'm saying maybe you can do the video game violence after the war.
We'll be there for you with the violent video game war's over.
I'll be there for you after the war. I mean, but frankly, I don't care right now. I mean, I care more about the fact that, let's see, 10 soldiers died Wednesday.
Well, my God, have you played Grand Theft Auto Vice City?
Yeah.
Don't you know?
Yeah, I know it's bad.
And then there's the nude scene in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
The nude scene, and then there's the movies that are basing themselves on Grand Theft Auto and Resident Evil and all of these. But you know what's funny? The same people who will attack video games, will they attack Sleeper Cell on Showtime or 24?
They love 24. What are you talking about?
You're
un-American.
But you see, these shows, a lot of America isn't able to digest and understand the racial ethnicities, and they think when they see an Arab on TV, they're going to be like, that's the enemy. That's it right there. That's the enemy. It's Haji.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the little dude from Memphis, like the guy we talked about last night, Van Crocker, he goes walking on by muttering about the hydrochloric acid at the electroplating factory, and, that's not the terrorist. Yeah, it is.
You want to see what it's doing to our kids? I have a good way for people to check. Go to YouTube sometime. Go to the comments section on any of these videos and go through half of them and see that half of these are 13-year-olds and look at the opinions that they're making and think of like, okay, we'll probably lose 45% of these people to this lame rhetoric that they keep putting out.
Well,
and they won't understand. They won't understand when the country is broke and we're all in a bleak situation. They'll be like, "Well, it's somebody's fault." Nobody takes a look. Nobody understands the defense.
Yeah, but by God, Hillary will be there, and she'll be telling us it was the video games.
Well, you know, knowing the luck of karmic debt with the Bush family and all the Republicans, we'll have our first queen in a long time, Queen Hillary Clinton. I mean, I just see these people, you know, they really helped her get it to this level, you know?
Well,
they really did help her get to this level because they kept putting her name out there.
Well, you know, I get these I get these email alerts from Newsmuck. Dick the Toe Sucker Morris had a column today saying, "Can Hillary win? Yes. Should she win? No." And referred to her as a Democratic Nixon. See, this is one of my biggest problems with Hillary, and it's not fair for me to say that it's a problem with Hillary. It's a problem with the fact that ever since her husband took office in 1992, January 93. There's an industry. I mean, you know, like Pittsburgh used to have a steel industry.
You know,
right wingers in this country have an industry that is entirely centered on trying to destroy Hillary Clinton.
You know, Bob, the problem is they're not staring at information. All of these politicians, like Hillary, I guarantee you there was a different Hillary at college. Something happened along the way. Her brain was wired, but. You know, they don't stare at information. They're staring inside their lobster bisque dish, and that's really what's happening right now.
Well, you know, I take nothing away from the hard work that Hillary Clinton has done.
No.
You know, when she was a little girl growing up in Chicago, you know, her dad was ex-Navy or some such, and she'd bring home straight A's, and he'd look at the grade card and say, "Wow, they must not be very hard classes."
You know what these lobbyists and consultants are like, Bob?
What's that?
They're like Amway. Think about that for a second.
Oh, God.
They're like Amway. And if you think about it, it does make sense, because Rich DeVos, he's a big-time Republican contributor. Republican Party, and to some extent the Democrat Party, it has become this cult that is going in a down a direction we can't possibly imagine. But in particular, the Republican National Committee is like Amway, because what happens, I was listening to stories last night.
Hey, kid, you want to sell some soap?
I was listening to stories on the radio. You know what they do? This is what they were telling stories about how they would make people sell things. And they would say, what's the matter? You don't want to win? Are you a loser? And after, like, you know, 2 hours of this, if you're a submissive person and you're impressionable, that's what happens. You become one of those Republicans because you don't want to be demeaned like that. You're like, "Stop it, stop."
It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts. Why are you doing this to me?
Well, you know what? You just identified the raison d'être behind the entire rise of right wing talk radio.
Oh,
it was the only game in town. And if you're driving down the road, or you're going to the grocery store, or you've got an hour commute to work, and you've got that thing on there, you're sitting there, and you're a normal person, and you're a decent person, and you're hearing this freak tell you what a rotten, lousy human being you are for giving a damn about the rest of humanity, and you kind of have to go over to his side if you just want to stop the agony.
I don't care what people say. This mental conditioning, what they're doing, this is criminal. On a level, I mean, the violence alone, that's criminal. But the mental conditioning, that's like war crime criminal. But there's got to be some moral laws broken here.
Oh.
To our kids. Oh, my God. I saw the first 10 minutes of Jesus Camp.
Oh,
have you seen any of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know where they show the Christian Idaho in the Midwest?
Oh,
bombers and the camouflage paint.
Yeah, and the little kids praying to the cutout of George Bush. Yeah.
I will leave you with some hope on another turn.
That's good.
I actually went to my first Move On meeting this week.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I noticed is Move On really likes petitions, and their petition idea of this year I don't know why they think this is a good idea, but they said we must have signatures, but we must include pictures. And I'm like, you want...
Huh?
Yeah, that's what I said, too. I said, wait a minute.
Dude, I do not photograph well.
I know, and it's, besides that, we're living in Patriot Act 3. I don't care if people say Patriot Act 2. We're already past that sequel.
Let's just jump past the photos.
Jerry Bruckheimer right now is producing Patriot Act 3. Didn't you know that?
Yeah. Well, no. Let's just jump past the daggum photos and go to the thumbprints.
I know. That's what I said. And I was like, this is crazy. I mean, they don't care. These representatives don't care about people, and they want you to hold up signs like, get out of Iraq, which I thought was not very clever. But then they have all these different ones, and they want you to hold these signs up, and I'm like, I think the petition names matter, but I don't think anyone wants to look at, I don't think anybody cares about the pictures. They get the idea of the protest. I think there's a disconnect with Move On where they have a good idea, they have a good concept, and I'm not knocking them for what they do. They've done some good work.
Yeah.
But these field organization operations that they give us, just if that's all they can come up with, petitions, you know. I was like, there has to be some more input into these ideas than just petitions. There has to be something else. Maybe we need to have different websites, a viral campaign, something that's different than just the word petition, because we're living in 2006 right now. And I don't know, man. I mean, when people look at names, okay, they're names on a paper, but there needs to be something that's...
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
No, I understand what you're saying.
And I don't know. Maybe it's going to take a celebrity element to do that. We don't... Unfortunately, we don't have someone like John Lennon who's risking to be deported. And it's one of those situations where it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some resources to get it going, and it's definitely going to take the right figurehead. And these things don't happen overnight, as we can see with something like the neoconservatives.
And until the movement becomes something more than a weekend march, these things don't happen at all.
That's right. But I'm going to continue to go to these Move On meetings and see what happens with it, because I guess this was the first one in Augusta, and actually 20 or 30 people turned out. So,
well, great. You know, I hope you will, David, because you know, being active in something matters. It really does, because it cuts back on the ghettoization of progressive issues.
And I actually dragged my parents along too.
Did you really?
Yeah.
They were
impressed by what they were hearing, but they were in the same kind of boat where I'm like, a petition. They need to come up with something stronger than this. I mean, of all the money they spend, they get people to come in a room and they're like, all right, this is our idea. This is what we're going to do. They open up the handbook.
But maybe they're trying to seed the ground. This is our idea, and it's lame.
Right.
Maybe you can come up with a better one.
And another thing that was really that really surprised me, and I think I understand why Move On isn't having the kind of impact on a lot of people as it is, is because the momentum isn't there. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of Move On organizations, they meet once a month, and I think that's, I don't know. This isn't like a parents-teacher conference.
No, you need to be there every couple of weeks.
You need to be there every week, I think. And I don't think it's that much of a commitment to go for 1 hour. I think it's 1 hour a night. So, you know, That was my experience with Move On. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, did that found video work? No.
I'll be brutally honest. I have not had a chance yet.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't work, I'll have to send you an Avi player loaded with the. I think you can run it through Windows Media, but I'm not sure.
Well, I will. I think AVI.
Yeah. I don't know if you have an Avi player, because there's certain these people on these movie sites. I got to tell you, I mean, they like running the different converts and the formats, and they go crazy. And I'm like, people, just pick one format and use it.
Yeah, live with it.
That's what I'm saying. Then they go to the OGG, OCT. It's unreal. It never ends.
It's everybody trying to get a leg up.
Oh, I know. And that's another thing. It's an unhealthy addiction with all these things where we have where we can't just stick with one brand. We need eight.
Well, I promise you, I will. After Bruce is over tonight, I will try to have a listen or
all
a watch.
Right. Well, I'll check back.
And I'll email you back if it doesn't work.
Okay.
you
shout at me over it. Well, you know, Bob, I just wanted to get that through. And also, I'll leave this with what Lionel said last night. He said that right now, what we're going right now, is a Gordian knot in the world, he was comparing it to all of the conflicts we have with the war and the political situation. It's a knot where we don't know where the entanglement is, and it's going to take so much time to understand that just because somebody doesn't get something that we want done, or something doesn't go our way, we have to figure out this knot, people.
Well, yeah, and I don't think you get to take the Alexandrian option and come up and just hack it loose with a sword.
Right, and that would be the Green Party. So.
Well, no, I mean that would be the Iraq War. That's
yeah,
you know, oh,
Iraq
oh,
War.
I got a sword. You know, when all your problems are hammers, all your problems are going to look like nails.
That's right, and I just think it's important to put all this stuff into perspective and realize that. Peace and serenity isn't supposed to come overnight. It's supposed to happen.
It is work.
It is work, and it will be worth it, people.
I think you're right. David, thank you very kindly.
All right, Bob. See you later.
Take care. Bye now. I hate it when we don't get the hang-up noise, but you know, I'm picking on Agnes right now. It's 20 and a half minutes past the hour. No, you're waving your... We've got to get our producer symbols down. That means... Okay, that's this symbol, Agnes. Someday we're going to have a webcam. That's this one. Okay. Go to the phones. Peter's joining us from Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, my God. I talked to Agnes so long I ended up on the air. Oh, my God. I'll tell you, Bob, I do have something I want to talk about. There's something that's bugging me, but I got to tell you, I'm tired, so if you ask me any hard questions, you're just going to get like a duh. So you better take it easy on me.
Boop. Yeah.
The thing is Mary Cheney's lesbian new baby.
Yes.
Okay. Well, first let me just say, I don't think too much of Mary Cheney. First of all, she helped their father's office, and she works as an executive for AOL, so it's like two major strikes right there.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, and really in the grand scope of Dick Cheney versus AOL, the AOL thing's probably worse.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I gotta agree with you there.
Hey, I telemarketed AOL.
Yeah, that's something that I've been working on. I've been praying about forgiving. One day I'll get past
little
that.
Demons leaping on the bellows in hell for me.
But we do have AOL users, which is fine. It's just that...
Oh, I think I can still remember part of the spiel. Have you heard about AOL for broadband?
Yeah,
this was the thing where people who were already laying out $50 a month were supposed to shill out another $15 to get AOL that didn't do anything.
Right. You can add another $30 for absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Here's your AOL for the kitchen cabinet.
Oh, Lord. And what was that hope? That television show where they build people houses on Sunday night, it's like this ABC television program, and it's like they surprise somebody with a new home.
Yeah, Dream Home or...
Dream Home, something like that. Well, there's two things that always bug me about that show. One, when they're doing, like, show the family the house at the end of the show, there's always some computer system in it proudly displaying an AOL logo. And the second thing that caused me to completely stop watching it, even though I do admit that I cried every time I watched the damn thing, was they had Laura Bush on it one time.
Oh, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Final straw, man. I said ABC letters, and that was it. Never again.
And this is our vinyl polka-dotted shower curtain.
Yes. Oh, jeez. Well, anyway, what is killing me? You know, I've had some computer things going on in the last few days, and I've been hopelessly out of touch, but I'm trying to catch up. But what I'm seeing here is that the religious right is remaining in absolute horrified silence over the fact that Mary Cheney...
Not quite.
Has a baby. And, you know, it violates all of their sanctitudes or whatever, you know. You're not...
Well, you have had computer problems, so you probably didn't get to see the exclusive photo of the father of Mary Cheney's baby at WD40.com yesterday, did you?
No, is this a joke?
Picture of a turkey baster.
Oh, and that's what I'm calling to ask you, the gory details. Did they adopt or did they do a baster baby?
It's a baster baby.
For real?
You know, they probably, you know what, they probably called up, what's her name? You got any of David Crosby's left?
That's too funny. She's got a baster baby. So which one of them hatched?
Not yet. She's pregnant.
Oh, she's pregnant. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Barry, the one that... Okay.
Yeah. No, but they haven't been as silent as you might think.
The rights are beginning to... Because, you know, they love Cheney. He's like the brains for Bush, and they all realize that. They deny it, but they all know it. So the fact that not only is his daughter a lesbian, she's done this, it's like must be striking horror in their heart.
Well, I've got... It just so happens, because of the miracle, the wonder that is Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org, they took... You know, they watch Fox so you don't have to.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the slogan of a site called NewsHounds, who does the same thing. But we've got I got a little audio here, you know, because you have been having computer problems and you haven't been able to hear this stuff.
No, I have.
And you know, anybody who is as tired and punchy as you are, Peter.
Yeah, I'm not a well man.
Yeah, really does deserve this.
Okay, hit me.
Hit us, Agnes.
Back in the book segment tonight. As you know, Vice President Dick Cheney is a staunch conservative, but seems to have a good relationship with his daughter, Mary, a lesbian. Now, Mary Cheney has announced she's expecting a baby next spring. The father is unknown. Ms. Cheney says she'll raise the child with her partner, Heather Poe. And that refocuses the debate over so-called alternative families, a situation that remains controversial in America. Joining us now from Kansas City is Margie Mannion, who studies and writes about parenting. As you know, as everybody knows, there is a strain of thought about it in America. I write about it in Culture Warrior that
gotta
says you don't need a mom and a dad. That two dads or two moms can do just as good a job as a mom and a dad in raising a child. Do you believe that?
Actually, no. I think that the mother and the father both play an important role, but I think that they both bring different things to parenting. They have totally separate styles. We are wired. Everyone knows that we are wired completely.
Oh, she's wired.
Yes, she's wired.
Men and women are. We do discipline differently. We play with our children differently. We nurture our children. So I think we both have important roles in parenting, but I think that they're both irreplaceable roles.
Okay, but Mary Cheney and her partner are going to have a baby in the spring. Not going to be any dad around. In your experience and research, because there have been a number of studies, will that child suffer a deficit?
Well, you know, every child and every parent is different. In my opinion, I think the best ideal situation would be to have a mother and a father.
All right,
present.
But let's.
I think that they're at high risk.
What will the child miss without the dad?
Athena.
You know, every parent is different. It would depend on other role models and other male figures in the child's life. So that's hard for me to say, not knowing other.
You mean
other
like an uncle or a grandfather or somebody like that?
Right, somebody that can be a positive.
Would you
strong,
say it would
mature?
Be mandatory for a lesbian couple to bring in some male presence to help the child?
Huh?
I would, in my belief, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mannion, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Did you just hear what I heard?
Yeah, you know.
It would be mandatory to bring in some male presence to help raise the child?
I would just love for her to say to some big old Bill Dykes face, "You're wired differently than a man." How do you slap?
I'm gonna beat you to death with this here wallet that's got this here chain hooked to my belt loop,
and change the tire on the car. I'll give you.
And you say that lovingly, of course.
Well, of course I do. You know, lesbians are people, and I've just been dearly fond of many of them. But you know, and she can't help it that Dick Cheney is her father, but.
I love the stuff that comes out of O'Reilly's mouth and the way it comes out of it, Peter, because of in there, along the way, he said, Dick Cheney's daughter, Mary, a lesbian.
Yeah, right. And every time there's a headline, it's always Dick Cheney's lesbian dollar or lesbian dollar. The word, it never leaves, are they? It constantly.
But I wonder if O'Reilly realizes that when he says it that way, it's always marry a lesbian.
Funny. I had thought of that. Yeah, he's
but my favorite though, you know, the good stuff's all, you know, hey kid, the first one's free. The good stuff always comes from the focus on the family.
Oh yeah, what is the comments there? I have
this is an analyst.
Oh goody.
Named Carrie Gordon Earle, and she said, quote, conceiving a child outside of a heterosexual marriage is, quote, not a good idea because, and this is the quote that I really, really, really love, because, quote, love can't replace a mother and a father.
That makes just as much sense as, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Love can't replace a mother and a father. Love can't replace all the psychological screw-ups you can get from really bad heterosexual parenting. Love can't replace a mother and a father.
Yeah, well, never mind that. What is it? One out of five or three out of ten children are born out of wedlock? It's some really high,
yeah,
high incident, and not to mention the divorce rate. Anyway, we all, you know...
And the Republicans like them till they're born.
Yeah, they like them till they're born. But what I want to know is, why didn't she just go get one of them damn snowflake babies?
You know, that's right. That's a Bush administration federal policy that we've spent several million dollars publicizing and making little matchbooks that say, you know, instead of draw spunky, it's get spunky. Yeah.
Well, what, you know...
Tough crowd.
I she's tried to do it on the cheap with a turkey baster and a jock in the bathroom.
Oh, God!
I'm sorry, I am.
And I thought I was over the top with Get Spunky.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I'm sure the right is just melting down badly over this, but they're being more quiet than you would expect. But some of them will die of embarrassment. God, I hope so.
Here's another one for you from analyst Carrie Gordon Earle. Mary Cheney's pregnancy raises the question of what's best for children. Just because it's possible to conceive a child outside of the relationship of a married mother and father doesn't mean it's the best for the child.
Yes, God forbid that the child should grow up knowing what they don't want them to be taught in school. And
concerned women for America, they're deliberately bringing a child into the world without a father, leaving a great gaping hole. Do they understand what they're saying?
What is this worship of the phallus? I just don't freaking get it.
And you're gay!
Well, you know, well, that too. Oh, God.
No, I'm not trying to be mean.
No, I know you're not, honey. I know you're not. But the thing about me is that I, you know, men and women are I think of it as just indoor and outdoor plumbing. Other than that, there's really no difference, except that women, you know, to tend to, you know, be maybe more sensitive to things than men in general, or more intuitive or smarter. And I think Agnes and I figured that out, because it's a proven scientific fact that testosterone reduces intelligence.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Never mind, this is your brain on drugs.
So, you know, no wonder they're bored, you know.
You know, it's with the, you know, I had a friend who used to look at that every time that commercial would come on with the egg frying, you know, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. And she'd look at him and go, dude, are you going to eat that? And, you know, but, you know, this is your brain. This is your brain on testosterone. Dude, are you going to kill that?
That's so funny. Lord. Well, thank you for filling me in, Bob. I just, this one.
No, I didn't mean to be so over the top. I apologize.
Well, I'm just wired for over the top. All my brakes are gone. They're complete. My brake pads are gone. I'm probably thinking it's probably advantageous to get me off the air as quickly as possible. But I just wanted to know what the freak was going on with the lesbians and the baby and the
the turkey baster and David Crosby.
Oh, jeez. Well, anyway, that's all I know about that.
Thank you, Peter. Yeah, thank you so much.
You guys are back of the era. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Yes. Good luck.
Yes. Bye.
Bye. God, I love Peter's phone calls. Let's talk to Wayne for a minute. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing good. We've had our comic relief moment now.
Well, didn't O'Reilly establish already that all these out-of-wedlock kids are the Penguins' fault?
Glenn Beck did, if he didn't.
Oh, was that Glenn Beck? I don't know. One of them jerks, anyway.
Damn Penguins.
It's them Penguins' fault.
I get the creepy right-wing email, right?
Yeah.
It's also been established that the war on Christmas is psychologically harming American children. Not saying Merry Christmas is warping children. I didn't know we liberals were capable of so much evil.
Oh, we're capable of a lot of evil. A lot of evil. I was, the roads are a mess. It took me an hour and a half to get home, and you know how far I am from my office.
You were flying.
Oh, yeah. And so I'm stuck in the radio or in the truck, so I'm listening to Michael Savage.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Michael just discovered what an evil son of a gun Baker is. He just found out,
Well, that must have been hell for him.
Yeah, that Baker defended the 9/11, survivors against Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And, that he has, his law firm has 600 or 700 lawyers, and their clients are Dubai and...
Dubai Ports World.
The United Emirates and...
The Saudi royal family. Yeah.
And, But, that whole thing, the Iraq study group, give me a break. Give me a break.
I got more studying done as a senior in college on a Friday night than the Iraq study group put into that report.
Well, what a joke. And, this is just, it's another ploy, it's another diversion to continue the war the way it's going, these Democrats... thank God for guys like Kucinich. I just wish they'd start, the only way to end this is to cut off the funding and cut it off now.
Yeah, bumper sticker politics, I guess. Get out now.
Now. I got a bumper sticker that says support the troops. Bring them home. That's how you support them. Not by, And then, I want... The other morning, I got up and turned on that Imus.
Yeah.
And you had played, what's Foster's first name?
Foster Brooks?
Yeah. Who's standing in for George W. Bush.
Football, yeah.
Yeah, the first, And they showed the video of it.
Yeah.
That's even harder to watch than listen just to the audio.
And see, I got taken issue with a little bit last night, but the audio makes me think he's drunk. You see the video, and it just reinforces it for me.
Well, he came close to throwing up again. There wasn't a Japanese guy around for him to, or he probably would have continued.
What?
Yeah, and I'm sitting there, it's 10 after 6 in the morning, and... Imus says, I just love the old man. Well, who doesn't? At 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm yelling at my
guy. I don't.
And this guy is crying tears over his son. How many tears have these people shed over the hundreds of thousands of people that they have martyred?
And not a single tear at a single American soldier's funeral.
Not one. Yeah.
Poppy hasn't been to one. Jeb hasn't been to one. W hasn't been to one. Condi hasn't been to one. The laundry list. Ain't been to one. Ain't shed a tear.
Which website does the hypocrite of the week? I can't remember.
Is
it Bard or?
Well, no, let's see. The Democratic Underground has the top 10 conservative idiots. Buzzflash has the conservative hypocrite of the week.
There's got to be some stiff competition this week, I tell
you.
Competition.
Yeah, and Peter talking about Mary Cheney's baster baby. I don't think we get to say stiff on the radio either.
Oh, you saw that picture of the father.
Yeah. I think his brother lives in my kitchen drawer.
Them guys, the way they set that up, when that came up on the screen, all you saw was the headline at the bottom.
Exclusive
of the screen,
photo of Mary Cheney's baby's
and
father.
I turn it on and I'm going, God, that's amazing. How the hell did these guys get that?
And then the page loads.
Who donated that sperm? And when I scroll down, I just start cracking up.
Oh, the guys are good, Wally and Dookie and Clyde. They never take a break, I got an email from Clyde the other day. He's got 14 inches of snow on the ground out there somewhere near Kansas City. And that's a day before they come up with that there's no slowing them down.
Oh, no, they're brilliant. I tell you, I love that website. I love that. And O'Reilly, I'm going to tell you your war on Christmas. And you mentioned war on working class, war on nurses.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, these people sit down, they must sit down and get like a 10-year plan together, these corporate people. 2004, 2005, we're going after the grocery workers. Remember all the strikes,
yeah.
Union, United Food and Commercial
Workers. Kroger's, Bob's, yeah.
Yada, yada. Well, now they're, they got beat up pretty bad on that. Now, United Food and Commercial Workers and whatever union represents, the different grocery workers really stood their ground. And they did real good. I mean, they held on to their health benefits and stuff and that. But now they switched to the war on nurses. You got the thing in Vegas. You got the California Nurses Association that they're trying to destroy. You got the Kentucky River cases. Right here in West Virginia, what Appalachian Regional Hospital chain are doing to our nurses.
Yeah, we talked about that a few nights ago. This idea that you can just come out and, management can breach a contract.
Exactly. And I got, and I'm not going to mention any names, but, this has been mentioned to a Democratic mayor of a city where one of these hospitals is, and said, sometimes the companies have to, you ain't no Democrat. Let me scratch you out. A contract is a contract. If you don't like what's in there, in 3 years, you get to try to change it. You can't.
Deal with the contract till the contract's over and then try to negotiate favorable terms. It's give and take.
Exactly. And, what if, in that nurse's contract, there has to be, the nurses have to give a 10-day notice before they do any kind of job action. What if they didn't do that? What if they just walked off the job? Why, there'd be lawsuits. Mashing of teeth.
Jailings.
Exactly. And, I don't know. It's,
Like the nurse's case out, and I guess that's over. I saw some indication earlier this afternoon.
I guess they agreed to the, which the nurses and the governor-elect and the, it's not the Secretary of State. They got some kind of other title for them. Anyway, they're the ones that, went to the nurses and said, instead of going on strike, how about doing a 30-day cooling off period, continuing negotiation?
And the nurses said okay.
And the nurses said okay, and the hospital locked them out.
And brought in scabs.
Right. So, but I think that that 30-day period is in effect now, from what I understand.
Well, good, because it's... no one was that was the important thing about that disagreement. Nobody was griping about pay.
No, they weren't.
And they weren't even at the point. They weren't even griping about benefits.
They've been working without a contract since June.
Yeah, but the concern was the patient
for
to nurse
patient.
Ratio.
For the patient, that's right. And if you get into that and read, where they want a ratio where something where. A nurse doesn't have any more than 8 patients. They would like 6, a registered nurse. And then they go into the whole thing of ratios of, where heart attack victims or people with heart problems, how, the survival rate is so much greater where a nurse only has 6 patients to take care of. And then the percentage of deaths goes way up.
Yeah, and that speaks to me.
Huh?
That speaks to me, and I think that speaks to ordinary Americans.
It speaks to a guy that had triple heart bypass, I'm going to tell you.
Another part of the dispute that they had was that this Universal Healthcare Systems, and I love the name of the company, Universal Healthcare.
That's the two hospitals, right?
Yeah, sure. Universal Healthcare Systems, right.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the right to, and this is just by way, I'm just making this up, but this is the nature of what they want. They wanted to be able to freely shift nurses among different treatment specialties. In other words, you've been working 5 years in cardiac intensive care. Okay? Well, the hospital company said, you know, if we need to do it, we want to shift you over to neonatal.
Yeah, or hemorrhoid control or something.
Right, or we want to take hemorrhoid control and put them on coronary ICU.
Right.
And, you know, that's wrong. I mean, you're a carpenter. You know, you've got jobs that you do and you do well. And there are jobs that you know that you shouldn't do.
And won't do.
Well, this is the same thing. A coronary intensive care nurse is a very, very specialized professional.
Yes.
And to the same extent that you would not ask a drywall hanger to wire an HVAC unit, you don't ask a coronary intensive care nurse to go and do the oncology.
No, you don't. That's exactly right.
Because in both examples that I've just cited, people will die.
Well, you should see, and I hope these, you know, I'm talking to these, well, Kentucky Nurses Association and people, and hopefully they're going to get together and do an interview and stuff. But you should see what they're doing to these nurses. Now, I mean, it's, you know, they're changing. Now all the nurses have to wear white. Now they can only wear a certain brand of shoes.
Jesus.
Now, you know. I was talking to the president of the union just a little bit ago, and I said, you know, it's not going to be too long where you guys are going to look like nuns. You know, they'll have them with that, you know, the egg thing for your face and whatever, you know.
Wimple.
Right. White penguins.
Yeah.
They'll be, you know. There's a war on working people, and working people better. Well, I think they are waking up. You know, the janitors in Houston, the people at Smithfield, people are waking up. And, you know, it's time for the labor movement to wake up, and I think that's happening. And what we have to do is demand that Democrats be Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to run with a D after your name, you damn well better be supporting us. And if you're not, then we're going to get rid of you in 2008.
Well, you know, I think we're taking a step toward that. I don't know if you saw this today, Wayne, but one of the things that you and I specifically have talked about on this program is the statement that we don't think it's too much to ask this incoming Congress to work as hard as anybody else in America does. Now, the Republican Congress worked less than any other Congress has in the history of the United States.
Well, exactly.
And their hours, get this, their hours were from Tuesday noon to Thursday at about 2. Now, Steny Hoyer has come in, and I like what he's done. He came in and announced that the work week of Congress would now be Monday through Friday.
Wow, what a completely unique idea.
Yeah, but the best part is the hissies that it caused.
Oh, I can imagine.
There's this little Republican goober from Georgia named Jack Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Kingston says that because the Congress is actually going to do its job, he said...
he wants more money.
No. It's not that he wants more money. He says, keeping us up here eats away at families. Marriages suffer. The Democrats could care less about families. That's what this says. Hearing a Republican talking about marriage is suffering just
hey,
was almost
a perfect solution for him. I mean, it's used quite often. I have to resign my office because I want to spend more time with my family.
Well, exactly.
There you
and,
go.
You know, this is the guy who comes from the same party where a guy ran his reelection campaign with the slogan of, I had a mistress, but I didn't choke her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, Don Sherwood. You know, but
there's some real family value.
Yeah, I've got a $160,000 a year job that I don't want to do.
Right. And you know, a lot of things got to, another thing has to change is all these special retirement benefits that legislators and, you know, senators and House members have.
Yeah.
No. Social Security. You're going to pay into Social Security, and that's what you get. Watch how fast that'll get fixed.
I think there's been some discussion of that in the past, but exactly. You know,
well,
of course, yeah. I'd like to pay a minimum wage and see how quick that went up too. But yeah.
Well, and I was listening to that Clark Howard, that financial guy.
Yeah, out of Atlanta.
Right. Well, you know, there's like all these different retirement packages and. I can't name them all, but he said, oh, that's the best. That one's the best. That he said, well, the only one that has any better package than that are the senators. Why, how come everybody doesn't have one of those, Mr. Senator?
Well, because some Americans are more equal than other Americans.
Yeah, apparently so, you know, but, you know. I go by this, you know, the old thing where, you know, the guy puts his pants on one leg at a time just like I do. And that is, you know, I don't mean to salt any of the women, you know. I guess they put their pantyhose on one leg at a time too, don't they?
And sometimes they're even allowed to wear pants.
That's true. Wow, what a great country. Oh, man. I don't know. It's exciting times, man. But
yeah, it is. But by the same, you know, we started out the program. I know you were trying to get home and stuff, but we got to get serious about the war, and the Iraq study group can stuff their report for
yeah,
what I care.
This, you know, I mean, well, you were saying it last night. I mean, you know, like what are these people's qualifications?
Yeah, I'm Edwin Meese. I was Attorney General of the United States, and I was absolutely obsessed with sex.
Right.
Well, put me on the commission.
And I'm James Baker. I have so much money, I don't know what to do with it, but I want more.
And I'll get more by defending the Saudis against any American who sues them.
Right. And I'm still upset that you guys won't let the Dubai people do port security.
Oh, but they're going to. I just read that story.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, really.
Are we back at that again?
Yeah, this is... Oh, dang it. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Yeah, there it is. This is what's being... Yeah, granted, bear in mind, it comes from Newsmuck. Okay, there's right-wing thugs, but... It's a Dubai Ports World, the Arab-owned firm whose purchase of American port facilities caused a U.S. political uproar, will join a program aimed at stopping nuclear weapons being smuggled into the United States. The program would involve screening U.S.-bound cargo for radiation at more than half a dozen ports, including in Britain, Honduras, Oman, and South Korea.
That really makes me feel secure.
Yeah, I trust them.
That really makes me feel... I mean, you know, what are those guys? Are they the... You know, what are they called? The Dubais or something?
Yeah, they're the United Arab Emirates.
Okay, well, I got, you know, here's a plan. Why don't you guys go replace all our GIs in Iraq, finish that up for us and prove...
And we'll let the GIs check for the nuclear weapons.
Yeah, there you go. We'll bring them home and let them check our ports.
Yeah, but see, that would mean that the people in the UAE would actually have to participate in their own protection.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that won't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Wayne, have yourself a good night, man.
Okay, buddy, I'll be talking to you.
Later.
Don't go out.
No, I looked. Yeah. No, I can't even find my winter boots yet. I'm stuck inside for the duration.
Well, you know, even, I mean, with the conditions out there, four-wheel drive or no, man, it's not safe.
No, you can have eight-wheel drive, and it still ain't worth a tinker's dam on ice.
Exactly.
All right, later, man.
Okay, have a good one.
See ya.
Bye.
And quickly to our good friend Cassie. Cassie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Pretty good. I was calling about a couple of two things. One, I was
calling to talk about that video game that Walmart is still having.
Oh, you mean Left Behind Ultimate Assault or whatever it's called?
Yes. Yes. It's,
where the Christians get to kill the infidels?
Yeah. It's like the Walmart won't let video games on that use swear words, but they'll let video games on that let Christians kill other people.
Well, that's because Walmart's a Christian company. I'm being facetious.
It's not the right kind of Christian.
It's not Christian at all. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
Okay.
But you know, we've been following this story for about a year now, Cassie, and getting little screenshots every now and then.
Well, there's a thing that people are putting up on the chat room about how to write a letter to Walmart and tell them to not carry this game.
Well, I think it would be wise for people to do that. Maybe we can post that on the website as well.
Okay. Well, I have the site. I can give it to you.
Okay.
You want me to give it to you now?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Hold on. I mean, is it one of those long websites that nobody will...
Yeah. 3-8...
Yeah, if you don't mind, email it to me, and I'll shoot it over to Susan, and she can hang it up on the website.
Okay, sounds good. And then the other thing that I was telling about was to say... when you were talking about Mary Cheney and her baby, and all those people are saying that everybody needs to have a mom and a dad, but they won't do anything with foster care, and they won't do anything for people who have abuse in their families or treatment for parents who are addicts and alcoholics, so that they can be better parents.
Right.
Or any of that. And it's like, well, just having a mom and a dad is no use.
Well,
I had a really lousy one of each. And
you know, you didn't have any say so in picking her either, did you?
What?
You didn't have any say so in picking your mom. It's not like it's your fault.
No. Uh-uh.
Exactly. You know, but see, that's what you're dealing with, Cassie, because these people talk about how they love children, and they these right wingers, and they talk about how they love fetuses. They only, you know, their love only extends to the point where the baby takes its first breath. After that, baby is on its own. After that, if you pay attention to politics, and you're well on the way to being a very alert and very self-informed member of this nation, and I'm proud of you for that. What you're going to learn is that if you talk about saying, you know, what you just mentioned, increasing funding for foster care or for addiction treatment, the minute you bring that up, there will always be a Republican standing somewhere nearby who will say, we don't need more social programs.
But that's what helps children, and that's what helps families. And then, like, if they had addiction program, I don't know, but maybe if my mom had gone to treatment or had had help to stop using drugs, maybe she never would have got arrested.
Yeah. But you see, that's a social program. And Republicans hate social programs. They hate anything that benefits anyone except their very narrowly defined little clique. If it is good for the general public, they don't like it. I don't understand it.
Addicts and their family too.
Right, but you know the thing is, you're supposed to be rich enough to fix it for yourself, and if you're not, too bad.
And is that why there's less money for free lunches and free breakfast?
Absolutely. You know, it's certainly before your time, but there was a very evil old man named Ronald Reagan whose administration once tried to get the Department of Education to classify for purposes of school lunches, tried to get ketchup classified as a vegetable. So that they could say, you know,
can I try that at dinner tomorrow?
Pass the ketchup. No, really, you know, because that way they could say for statistical purposes that every school lunch came with three vegetables. And, you know, one of them would be a little pile of wilty lettuce, another one would be some cooked corn, and the third one would be a package of ketchup. I'm not making this up.
I know.
This is the world that you're going to have to deal with as you grow up. And at least, you know, what I admire about you, Cassie, is you've got your eyes open.
I have my eyes open, and we're going to change it, because it's not good.
The most I can promise you is that I will try on behalf of and others in my generation and the one before me, we'll try not to blow the world up and let you fix it.
Okay.
Because we haven't been very good at the fixing thing so far.
It's a deal.
Okay. Thanks, Cassie.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. And that's the show for this evening. And we've been all over the place, and I hope you've enjoyed going there with me. With us. Agnes and me.
I'm not here.
Who sneered at me.
I'm not here.
She's sneering, but she produces very nicely. And many thanks. No, that was a sneer. Don't. No, 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 please. That wasn't even an Elvis. No, she did a lovely job producing the show this evening. John Fox, engineers from Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services is our IT professional when he's not dealing with massive computer crises of his own. Good luck. We're thinking of you. Every program on the Horn is brought to you because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And by building the American dream, they're able to support the Horn. And we're trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington today, President Bush met with British Prime Minister Tony Blair one day after the Iraq Study Group released its report. The two held a press conference during which President Bush continued to assert that the coalition forces would prevail in Iraq. However, the president did acknowledge that the situation there is bad. The Iraq Study Group's bipartisan 10-member panel came up with 79 separate unanimous recommendations on how to change the president's policy in Iraq, which the group concluded was not working. One of those recommendations is a call for the withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from Iraq by early 2008. President Bush has already rejected that idea. There are several other studies of the situation in Iraq underway, including ones by the National Security Council, the Pentagon, and the State Department. President Bush said he would not make any decisions until after he gets all of those reports. Afterwards, the president plans to give a major speech to explain any change in his Iraq policy. Wednesday was one of the deadliest days for U.S. forces in Iraq. The military now says 11 American troops lost their lives in several separate attacks. In the first week of December, at least 31 U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq. Late yesterday, the Senate gave near unanimous approval to Robert Gates to be the new defense secretary. The vote was 95-2. Members of the 109th Congress may vote on a massive tax and trade package before ending their lame duck session. The legislation would normalize trade with Vietnam and extend tax breaks that affect millions of Americans. However, the controversial bill would also open up oil and gas drilling in more than 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. Saudi forces battled gunmen today at Jeddah, a port in the Red Sea. The Interior Ministry reported that two Saudi security forces were wounded in the shootout. The gunmen were believed to be Islamic militants. A Middle East scholar resigned his position from the Carter Center in Atlanta after controversy over former President Jimmy Carter's latest book on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.